And welcome to Off the Hook Overtime here on YouTube. It's Emmanuel. Kyle, you make it okay?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, and let's check in with our Skype land people. Rob T. Firefly.
Hello.
Gila.
Hi.
Alex.
Hey.
And Welton.
Hey.
Good to see you continuing the conversation. Good discussion, too. Hard topics. Very stressful and horrible time of history, but I think going back and forth and presenting the facts as you do is so important and really needs to be heard at this particular time. Let me just ask, Welton, what kind of response have you been getting in light of recent events? Has there been an upswing in support? Have you had to work harder?
The team's already working super hard, but yeah, we've seen a upsurge in interest in the platform, in just media inquiries, people asking us, hey, what are you seeing on Truth Social? What are you seeing on Gab? How are people responding across the different smaller social media sites that we monitor? So. It's been a busy, three or so weeks. But that's, nothing compared to what people, in the Middle East are actually experiencing right now. Right. So.
Of course. Yeah. Is it fair to ask you of all the media, social media outlets, which one tends to do the best or has the most accurate, news being spread around or is the least irresponsible maybe?
I mean, I if I see something from the BBC, I generally think that it can be relied on, but no one's perfect, right? I think this is the thing, and especially now, and goes to why institutions are having the crisis of faith that they're having.
Mm-hmm.
We're so, we see them all the time now, 24/7. In the past, when do you interact with the IRS? Like once a year, right? But now if you want to interact with the IRS, you can go on Twitter and tweet at the IRS or call them up.
And they respond. Email, right? That's weird. But I meant mostly with social media, though. Do you have any in particular ranking as far as who is the most responsible, who basically keeps misinformation from spreading like wildfire?
I mean, there's a new platform called Counter Social that says that its primary – goal is to, counter disinformation.
Counter
and
social.
Keep the platform free of, non-factual information. But I don't generally think that's, like, what's happening there. But
It's a lofty goal. It's a lofty goal, but can they actually pull it off? It's
super, yeah.
It's not easy.
No, and... I think part of the issue is, I was going to say this before, how to win on social media is not to play. I mean, I try to confine my professional activities to LinkedIn, basically. but I've stopped engaging on X, and increasingly I find myself, if I turn on X, it's mostly to find out, what's the latest disinformation that people are spreading?
Uh-huh.
It's not to find factual information.
Interesting.
So, we're in a topsy-turvy world now, I think.
That could be a good site in and of itself, like misinformation, disinformation from social media, just collect it all together and have at it, and show where the lies are being spread the most. It's really kind of hard to keep track of. Go ahead, Rob.
The trouble with any sort of people who are out there working to dispel disinformation is not only has it become very fashionable in the last decade or so for people to just dismiss anything they don't like or that they don't vibe with as, oh, that's fake news, but the idea of fake news itself is coinciding with this era now in which it's so easy to generate fake anything you want. You can magic up audio of anything you like in anybody's voice. You can magic up video of anybody saying that audio. And so just as photography was thought to be like proof positive of something back before everybody knew how easily you could fake it, We're now at that point with pretty much every medium available to humanity. And so, like, how do we tell the fakes from the legit stuff nowadays?
I think you have to go to the source. I think you have to do investigations. And this is part of the challenge, is it takes time and effort to do that. It takes comparatively little time and effort to create it. And so you're always in this situation where, you know, you're running faster just to keep up. And at some point you probably become overwhelmed. And I think back to 2003 when Colin Powell went in front of the UN, and had, you know, some audio from some Iraqi officers talking to each other, and he had a little vial, right? He brought the vial with him. That's so quaint now, if you think about that, because none of that would pass muster with anybody here, right? People would say, oh, like, that's some grainy satellite imagery that you're bringing to the UN. Like, you know, where's the high quality, you know, smartphone photo, right? Or what's the vial full of? What's actually in there, right? But that's the problem now, is in the past we would say things like, I want video proof, I want photographic proof, right? And now you have Midjourney. You want it? I can give it to you. I can create whatever you want. And it's just, you know, there's no coding required. It's just typing in a prompt, right? So.
Do you think that the sheer volume that you're noticing is in part a result of there being more capture devices, e.g. cameras and so on, and also just more of that sentiment? Or is it clearly so disproportionate and as you said, so much running faster that it's a concerted effort? It's not necessarily the winds of society and opinion just being in hyperdrive naturally. I mean, are you sort of implying that this is like industrial scale, or I mean, because what it sounds like you're describing sounds like by design you are unable to catch up to it without employing equally powerful tools like fingerprinting it all or using some complex way of capturing and organizing where and how and what kinds of messaging it is. Can you speak to that at all? I mean, is it natural of the network?
Definitely part of it is there's so many different motivations that users are bringing to these platforms for why they're pushing this content, right? Some of it's ideologically driven. Some of it is they're getting paid to do it. I think a lot of the bigger OSINT, quote, OSINT in air quotes, accounts on X are trying to build up an audience or a brand so that they can get profit share from the platform. So there's definitely financial incentive to do it. I think some people are just regular old trolls and trying to, you know, muddy the waters and, you know, get some lulls off of it. So there's definitely a lot of that. But I also, you know, if you look at the most recent stuff that Microsoft's put out in terms of China using generative AI to, you know, propagate some of their propaganda. Certainly, if you see the influence of, like, Russian accounts, how much they've jumped into the Israel-Hamas conversation, right, there's definitely some kind of state-sponsored aspect of this as well, right? Mm-hmm. And in the past, state-sponsored hackers have also been quite effective, right, to the point now where I think the FBI came out and said that the Chinese had, like, the biggest trove of personal information on basically everybody on the planet that's ever been collected, right? They, like, know everything about us, you know? So if you're listening out there, you got my 23andMe data, good for you.
Yeah, that happened. 23andMe hacked. Wow. Just to continue with what Rob was talking about before, though, deep fakes, that's what we were supposed to be all concerned about, especially in the upcoming campaign. Has that proven to be the threat that everybody was dreading, or is it still to present itself in full?
Still haven't seen a deepfake that's confused a lot of people. I think some folks have pointed to there's been a video circulating of President Biden supposedly instituting a draft for military-age males. you know, is an old deepfake video from like, I don't know, maybe a year or two ago, and it's just been recirculated as a result of Israel Hamas.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, the technology is there. It's not hard to do this. It's got to, I think it has to be in the right context for that sort of a, you know, piece of content to actually confuse people, right? When it's out of context, when it's kind of like, this looks kind of fishy, people aren't going to get, you know, fooled by it.
Right. The thing is to make it believable, make it just small enough, you know, in the absurdity department where people will say, yeah, that's likely because that makes sense. Why would they lie about this? And that's a step. That's a step in the direction of completely changing the narrative. Fortunately, most of the people who do this aren't that good at it, but they're going to get better. They're going to get better. And it's, you know, I wonder what the next year is going to hold for us. On that note, switching things over, to domestic issues, have you seen anything of concern, regarding the upcoming election and all the craziness to come?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely been keeping a pulse on that and trying to keep our clients apprised. You know, I think the biggest thing of concern is just the continued echoing of 2020 stolen election conspiracies and how that's potentially going to impact voting in 2024. You know, behavior at polls, right? Because I think in some ways, if you want to think of 2020 as like a failed attempt to subvert the election with non-legal means, or kind of semi-legal means in some ways, these trials are just now starting, right? To hold these folks accountable for what they did in 2020. The informational trail has not caught up to that, right? People are still, a significant portion of people, you know, out there still think that the election was stolen. You ask them, like, genuinely, do you believe this?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's, if you want to draw a parallel to Israel Hamas, like, one of the interesting things that I've thought about is if we polled people today, like, what do you think is happening in Israel Hamas? How much of what people think is happening and what they, you know, believe and report actually turns out to be disinformation that they, you know, say like, oh yeah, I saw this thing about, you know, some incident, right? And you know, you kind of go back through it and go, that didn't happen. This didn't happen. Like you're just hallucinating these things, right? And so we're in a world now where we can have like a, you know, giant public hallucination about a major global event because the information that they're seeing is not verified and just coming across, you know, as a fire hose on Twitter, right? So
it's fairly easy just to manipulate public sentiment. We see that all the time in domestic politics, where we're constantly talking about Joe Biden's age and ignoring the things that you know, Trump gets wrong at his age. Where we're basically talking about COVID-19 as if, you know, Democrats invented that, and it becomes the narrative. It becomes something that's almost acceptable. That's without the help of deep fakes or high technology. Speaking to some election issues, this is a story that's ongoing involving the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency that actually Trump set up to protect elections and key U.S. infrastructure from foreign hackers. But now that organization is fighting off increasingly intense threats from hard right Republicans who say it's gone too far and they're looking for ways to rein it in. Rand Paul, for instance, says CISA has blatantly violated the First Amendment and colluded with big tech to censor the speech of ordinary Americans. Alex, I'm curious what your thoughts on this are, because this seems like it could really end badly if they see the organization that's meant to protect the integrity of elections as the threat.
Oh, it's already gone very badly. In fact, you know, we could spend another hour just talking about this particular case, but I'm sure some of the listeners will remember or recall from news of recent weeks that there was an injunction issued against the federal government in a case. It was known as Biden v. Louisiana. It was a federal district court judge who issued an injunction against the federal government on First Amendment grounds, preventing the federal government, certain components of it, CISA included, from working directly with social media companies to censor or address any kind of content-related issues on those platforms, which meant that FBI, CISA, the Biden administration itself individually named FBI agents in some cases as well. It was a really weird order. Were all prevented from working with social media companies until that was appealed to the Fifth Circuit. And in full disclosure, we had it at my law firm represented the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, a component of which was actually named in the order that was prevented from working with social media companies, and they weren't even part of the government. So we had actually appealed that to the Fifth Circuit, and we won. And some of that injunction, though, still stands. Some of it was thrown away, some of it still stands. And this very issue is right before the United States Supreme Court right now. And who knows how they're going to decide this issue. I mean, we have seen that they have not been the greatest stewards of judicial ethics as of the last couple of years. And this is, in fact, what I recently wrote an article about in the latest version of 2600, latest edition of 2600. That's going to presumably come out in a couple of months or next month. I don't know, whatever it is.
It's out now, Alex, unless you wrote another article we don't know about.
Oh, is it the last one? Oh, okay. It's in that one.
Yeah, it's in the autumn issue. Real. Boy,
okay.
Get with the times here.
It hit the newsstand.
It
almost knocked them over.
It did, yes.
If you go to page 52, right, that's the page you've always assigned me over there. And this is the one that talks that starts out about with the messenger? Yeah, okay, all right, yeah. For some reason, I thought that one hadn't come out yet.
Don't you get the magazine? I thought we should.
I do. Yeah, but I don't read my own articles, Ken. I'd be very narcissistic.
Yes. Okay. Well, any other concluding thoughts on this?
Go ahead, Mom.
Can I just add, you know, to Alex's point, part of what's going on is that the government, in order for the government to reach an audience, it's got to do it over private networks now, right? And it's been the case for a long time. This has been true. But because of the polarized, you know, society that we currently live in, attempts by the government to reach, you know, the right people, right, whether that's with CDC's messaging around COVID or it's, you know, talking about how we have secure and free elections, right, that's going to be interpreted through this polarized lens, unfortunately, even if the ultimate goal is just that the government needs to work through, you know, entities that essentially have become quasi-governmental, right? Like if you think of, you know, Twitter as a public sphere, right? It's impossible for the government to reach an audience that big without going over private networks, right? You have to. So there has to be some way for the government to interact with those organizations. It can't be, completely cut off, right? So
it seems like the institution's aim was to interact with these private entities in order to do some sort of filtering or at least monitoring, especially during critical events, I think. Is that sort of what CISA's goal was and what they were injuncted? Is that, I don't even know if that's the right word, from doing? And then it seems like it was twisted into, like, as we said, malinformation as a partisan issue or cudgel in this case, right?
Yeah, I don't have all the – it was Missouri v. Biden, right? Right, Alex?
Louisiana.
Yeah, it's maybe it is Missouri v. Biden. I can't actually remember. Or it's Louisiana v. Biden. I think it might be Missouri v. Biden, but the case was from a Louisiana judge. I think that's what it is.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Hey, let's open up the phone lines, 802-321-4225, if you want to join this conversation. If you have something else to say that's not related to the conversation, just hold off for a little bit. But right now, Weldon is here. We'd like to have any kind of interaction with listeners. 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. Go ahead, Alex, or Weldon.
I'm finished with my thoughts. You know, they don't go very far these days. Yeah.
Those phone lines are open.
And apparently we've run out of things to say. Okay. Well, the phone is ringing, so we're rescued, I guess. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to mention something about what you're talking about, kind of what you're talking about.
Oh, Rebel, if you did, that would be a first, so let's hear it.
Okay. Well, you're talking about deep fakes. You know how, like, the when you call a bank or, like, thing, they say, this call would be recorded?
Wait, how in God's name is this related to what we're talking about?
Because you're talking about deep fakes and people imitating, like, you know, the people, the way they sound. People,
all right, I'll allow it. Go ahead.
You get calls, and then they don't say anything. Like, you get a call from, like, a phone number that you can't call back, but there's nobody on the line when you're saying, hello. Hello, you know, they're recording your voice saying hello and is anybody there and all that, and then they're using that to make it deepfake your voice.
Interesting. Okay. Well, have any thoughts on training such scams? They go out and they call people and they record their voices and they use their voices in some way against them. Is that a thing?
I don't know how targeted that stuff is, but it wouldn't be that hard for somebody to find audio of people online. I mean, probably go back and look at some of these archives, right? You could train audio AI on your voice manual,
well,
just based off the podcast, right?
So. Of course, yeah, we're all doomed here on the show, absolutely. But Rebel, we have enough recordings of your voice where we can pretty much make you say anything we want.
No, they're calling people and getting their voice. It's not they're getting it offline, online from the internet. They call people, yeah. And then they don't say anything, and they record their voice. And then, you know, like they'll call a bank, you know, how the bank will say, this call would be recorded for, you know, whatever. Because when you, and then they'll say, I like to transfer money or whatever, or do stuff. And then when you call, and when the real person says, I didn't do this transaction, then they say, well, I'm sorry, here's a recording of you saying that you would like
well,
to.
Well, my advice, Rebel, can you imitate voices? Can you use a different voice other than yours?
Yeah.
So when that happens, just use a different voice. You want to practice? Here's a phone call. Ring, ring. You pick up.
You know, good.
That sounds like you, Rebel.
Good evening, sir.
There. You see, talk like that, you'll be safe. Simple.
But also, let's see. Everything is the same now. Like when you go to a mall, everything's a Simon Mall.
Say what now?
Like when you go to a mall in like whether it's Indiana or Ohio, or it's a Simon Mall. Every mall is a Simon Mall.
A Simon Mall? What fresh hell is this?
Sounds like a holding company or a. Man
wait, company. How do you know what kind of mall it is?
Because it says.
Where
Simon,
does it say?
Like
is there fine print
Simon
on a mall?
Real estate. I don't know, Simon Real Estate or whatever, like it's a Simon Mall. That's who, like, owns the mall or whatever.
All right, well, who cares?
And also when you listen to a radio show, like the rock stations and different, they all say, every one of them says cold beer and hot wings. It's the cold beer and hot wings.
Oh, we forgot to say that. Oh, they're going to be so angry at us. We forgot to say it this time. Thanks for reminding us too late, Rebel.
Two weeks in a row now. Forgot that.
Cold beer and wings. That was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, look, so you could get free money by just, well, I mean, if you know how to, you know, use, you know, deep fakes and you know, things like that.
And now tell us how we get free money. Go ahead.
Well, if you could use a deep fake and AI,
right.
You could, you know, have the artificial intelligence, you know, take the person's voice, like they'll, you could even copy, you know, somebody you know, their voice, and then go to their bank and say, you know, make it say, I forgot my account password, or I forgot my login, or things like that, and they'll, you know, they may give it to you, or, you know, they may reset your password, maybe they're, you know, you go online into their online banking, and, you know, in their voice, you say that I forgot my login, or whatever, and
I don't think it's that easy, but I mean, the point is taken, but it's not that easy. You have to be a little bit more clever than that. Maybe call your house and tell somebody in your house, oh, by the way, what's my password in case they happen to know it, and maybe they'll be fooled, but that's a whole lot creepier.
Let's see, what else?
Rebel, we're going to open up the phone lines for more people that want to talk about issues.
Oh, could you call? Why don't you call the operator? We like when you call the operator.
What operator? There's no operators anymore.
Please hold for long distance.
They've all been dismissed.
Would you like the rate? Would you like the rate or two? It's the message unit.
Yeah,
call.
And you're not the operator either. But Rebel, it's great hearing your voice again. And please keep listening. We'll be in touch. 802-321-4225. Well, I'm sorry, that's a rite of passage here. we have some interesting things I think that we've covered in the last hour and a half or so. But surely there must be some positive developments regarding high tech, things that, you know, we didn't have 20 years ago that now we do have that makes fighting these battles maybe a little bit easier. Is there perhaps such a thing?
I mean, you know, we're constantly evolving our AI to, you know, pick up more nuanced forms of concerning content that's out there. You know, I think a big thing that we've been working on for the last year or so is the ability to automatically detect, you know, images, video that contain, you know, say, like an anti-Semitic trope or something like that. Right, and just be able to do that at scale. So there are people working on this side of technology. I just think that the ways in which companies have released generative AI technology without really thinking about what are the appropriate guardrails, you know, just kind of letting people at it. And then after the fact, you know, some news report exposes, hey, you can get XYZ technology to say all these, you know, crazy neo-Nazi things, for example, right? Like, and then they go back and they go, okay, we're going to fix that. We're going to make it so that you can't do that anymore. And it's like, let's think ahead a little bit because this is just what happens, right? People are going to abuse the system.
Uh-huh.
Right? You build a system, you let everybody into it, people are going to abuse it. People are going to find ways to abuse it. This is like tale as old as time, right?
Well, it's like as irresponsible commercially as like releasing autonomous vehicles and just developing it based on bumping into bodies and eventually you teach it not to bump into bodies, but just...
Yeah, who knew that would happen?
Knock a couple people over, you know, you gotta have a couple concussions to make an omelet. I don't know, it's messed up.
Yeah.
It's irresponsible.
Very irresponsible. I mean, they can't possibly be that naive. You know, they must know what the risks are. All right. I'm sorry, 802-321-4225, having the phone lines open for a little while longer. Go ahead, Weldon.
I was just going to say that, you know, it's one of the major points in the AI blueprint that the administration sponsored and put out, you know, not being exposed to AI that doesn't have kind of safety built into it, right? And that's... I think a major challenge is that a lot of these good thoughts about how AI should behave and perform, it's all voluntary right now. There's no legal weight behind any of the things that have been suggested. And yeah, it's great. You've been able to secure voluntary, you know, compliance with these things from the tech companies, but you have no way of, you know, ensuring what's going on at these companies, right? Because it's not like they're just opening up, you know, their books to you and just saying, hey, we did everything according to the rules that you put out, right? So we're again in a situation where the government is in large part, I think, at a loss for how to control what these companies are doing. And a lot of, you know, like, legislators want to do something, but Congress is so just dysfunctional at this stage that I don't think anybody has any hope that something's going to actually get done on the legislative side. And the executive branch doesn't have that much power to do anything about this, right? So,
Although we should point out that today they finally decided on a speaker after 3 weeks, and I just found out that it looks like the auto worker strike might be settled on the same day. Isn't that amazing? Might be settled. We're not sure yet. We have a phone call?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
However late in the legislative session, yes.
And good evening, you're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening. Thanks. Thanks, everybody, for taking my call. Yeah, I had a half comment, half question. I figure I bring this up now, and if I'm wrong, you guys clarify this, but it's kind of related to what we're talking about here. And it's the presidential alert that we got like 3 weeks ago. Everybody remember what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Was that a presidential alert, or was it just the EAS test?
Yeah, it was like a slightly different version of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the EAS test.
Right.
Okay. So this test, right, that goes out to everybody, this, like, the thing that I was like, there's something about this that irks me, and I feel like I got the idea, but maybe you clarify this for me. Like, when they do, like, emergency broadcast system on the radio, I don't pay a subscription to the radio. Like, the waves are just out there, and my radio gets it. My TV, same thing. If you get cable, if you're paying a service, but you don't get emergency broadcasts over cable. So, like, the government talks to its people through these things that are government things, right? But my phone subscription is, what is it, 5G, that's being used to transmit that signal. That's private, right? Like, that's because I'm paying for that. And then there's, like, a disconnect there for me. Like, how come my government can't give me an emergency notification unless I've got this thing that, like, this commercial product, basically? Like, I have to pay for all of it in order to get that. And there's a disconnect that, like, I'm kind of hearing something similar, like, you know, our government, like, can't talk to its people because, like, it doesn't own these platforms. They're, like, private companies. And, you know, so I guess one, like, am I wrong? Am I getting something wrong about it? I guess, and then number two, if I'm not, you know, I just want to kind of bring it up as an idea of who owns, you know, the medium, I guess, maybe is what I'm saying. And what does it mean to us, like, as a society, democracy, like, how do you, you know, control true information if you don't even, you know, a private company is kind of owning the means of communication?
Caller, this is actually a very interesting point because as the providers of mobile phone service, the companies that run the airways and the infrastructure to do that are basically making a public utility of themselves. And as part of that, they grant access to emergency services. Like, your phone, even if you don't pay the bill, your phone connects to the network, and you can't make calls that you aren't set up to pay for, but you can call, say, 911. You can call emergency services with a phone that doesn't have service. You can still connect up to the emergency service that you need, as long as you can get a phone signal. And I think the EAS test was also... And someone correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding was that the EAS test was also supposed to work on phones that didn't have service in the same way, just in the other direction. So if you have a mobile phone, whether or not the bill is paid, say, the service for emergencies should be active on it, just based on the company providing that as part of their responsibility as a public utility.
Yeah, and to add to that, caller, and I think everything for that the gentleman from Queens has said was correct over there. But to think of it more, if you pull back, you're thinking a little bit. Think of it almost philosophically, right? It may be a private company, but the airwaves themselves are public, right? You know, anybody can use them, and nobody in fact owns them. The company, whether it's T-Mobile, AT&T, et cetera, they don't own those frequencies that they are broadcasting on. They have a license to use them in a particular manner that the federal government itself issues. So, you know, really, if you think about it, it's the government that's giving you that particular right or that license to use a bit of the spectrum, the radio spectrum, in a certain area. And that license comes with conditions. And they can yank it from you at any time as well. So if you think about, you know, who really owns the airwaves, probably the landlord that's renting them out.
And I do believe you can find out more information. This is
largely a part of the E911 system or deployment, I guess, protocols, and it's something that they want to guarantee as far as emergency services. And the emergency alert test was specifically to test mobile devices in this last version of it. And I had a couple phones that, as Rob indicated, they didn't have a SIM or weren't necessarily associated with anything, and they did receive some of those alerts. So you're right, but I totally hear where you're coming from, where it's like, it's weird that you're paying for a service, and there is a fair critique there that, like, the private mobile carriers are a utility when it suits them, but when it has anything to do with consumer rights, they will turn their backs and jump ship on you immediately. And, you know, you can set your watch to that. They do not want to be considered a public utility, mobile especially. They are wholly private, and we can get into a lot of the history and the who and the why of that.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, so much. Yeah, you put a little kink in my argument that, like, because it was through that, even if you don't have the subscription. Yeah, but what was just said now is absolutely, that was part of my kind of, where I was coming from, where, you want to be a public utility, but not when it's good for you.
Exactly.
Like they should, right? They should be a public utility, but like they're kind of not. And this made, I don't know, just made me think about it a little bit differently. Just about, who's private versus public and who's in control and therefore who can manipulate, or take advantage of. Thank you. I really raised this question to the right audience.
Well, thanks for your call.
Appreciate
thanks for listening.
Keep thinking about it.
Great show.
Take care.
Yeah.
You know, interesting, also, with regards to the EAS test, for the first time, because I didn't see this concern raised before. There have been a couple of other EAS tests, but those people who had hidden phones that they wanted not to be revealed, let's say you're in an abusive relationship and you have an emergency phone that your spouse does not know about, hidden in a drawer somewhere that's to be used for, you know, if you need to get out quickly or you need to call somebody for emergency aid. Even if that phone were in, vibrate mode or in silent mode, the EAS test would still make that phone sound the alert. And in that particular case, that could be fatal. That could be something really, really horrible. And these kinds of tests can be a real menace to people if they're not aware of them, if they don't take precautions. The only way to keep your phone safe from being discovered is to turn it off at that particular time or put it somewhere else far away. So.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think somebody in the chat brought that up as well as an example. So it's terrifying. And if you think about that philosophically, too, that's really a utilitarian choice. They know that there is going to be some harm that's going to result from this particular test, but really is the greatest good for the greatest number for us to have a properly working emergency broadcast system. That harm is justified by the end there. So it sounds Machiavellian and utilitarian.
802-321-4225 is our phone number. You might hear the phone ringing, but we're not picking it up because it's Rebel again, and we told Rebel that was it for tonight. I'm sorry. Well, I don't want to be mean, but we can't tie up the phone lines, which is literally what's happening right now. With the same person. So we want to open up to other people. So if there are other people out there, please give us a call, 802-321-4225, before he strikes again. Weldon, you want to give out your contact info again for the online listeners?
Sure. That's Welton, Welton, at puratech.com, puratech.com. If you want to just hit me by email. Yeah.
Does Puratech have a particular meaning to the word?
So Pura comes from the Pyrenees breed of dog, which is a quite protective breed. It's also one of the dog breeds that our chief technology officer, Eric, has. So that's why we decided to call it Pura.
See, I knew there was a story. I knew there was a good story behind that. That's awesome. Wow. And now you and Alex are still involved with Human Rights First, so perhaps tell us a bit about that organization, how it differs from this.
I just saw Alex at the annual gala held in New York. The organization brought a Ukrainian media organization called Guara Media to the States to, basically give them an award for outstanding work in the field of human rights. They have done a lot of work exposing Russian war crimes, documenting them across Ukraine. And it was, the event was quite good. And the organization, does a lot of work when it comes to fighting domestic extremism. They work on combating authoritarianism. They do a lot of stuff on the border with asylum seekers, and, helping link them up with pro bono legal assistance, in the U.S. And then, there's just a lot of, awesome things that I was, able to be a part of when I was with the organization, doing the Afghan evacuation, including, helping some folks get out safely, mm-hmm. Be able to get on flights, out of the country.
Alex, did you have anything to add?
I think it's Welton's given us, I think, a very excellent survey of Human Rights First, and the people within the organization, from the board of directors down, are just so talented, so dedicated, and routinely put themselves in harm's way to promote the ideals. And I think at root, what the ideals that Human Rights First promotes are traditional American values here. The best values that America has ever produced are what Human Rights First is carrying the torch of. I'm intensely proud to be part of this organization. And it was really through Welton that I came to work with them.
And the website is humanrightsfirst.org. And it's quite a website to navigate. It's really impressive. A lot of fun to move around and see different parts of it. I understand we have a phone call from a different phone number, Kyle?
Yes.
All right. This isn't going to be him again, I hope.
No. It's totally different.
All right. Let's see. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead. Speak up. There's no way there, Kyle. It's silent. It's quiet.
I think I have all the buttons pressed. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I say we give it 5 seconds, and if nobody says anything, we hang up and open up the phone line again.
Is this one of those things that's recording our voice?
Oh!
We can impersonate.
Stop talking. Shh. Quiet. We should have disguised our voices. All right. 802-321-4225. That was definitely what that was. Absolutely. Oh, my
God. Man, what are we going to do?
We can go back and erase it, but that doesn't help with the phone call. No. Go ahead, Rob.
I just the whole recording your voice to spoof your voice for automated systems or to fool other people into thinking they're you. I mean, the movie Sneakers warned us about that in 1992, and it's 31 years later, and we're not chopping up audio tape. We're using computers and algorithms to do the same thing. But it's still why putting anything important behind just purely sounding like somebody as a form of verification has never been a good idea.
We have another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Yes, I forgot to mention that.
Kyle, he slipped through. Rebel, we do have a blocking feature on this phone. We can easily get it started. We're going to give you 30 seconds, and that's it.
I know, everywhere you go when you travel around the guy, every hotel you go to, it's a Wyndham Hotel. Every hotel you go to is a Wyndham Hotel, like a budget motel.
Not if you go to a Marriott. Hotel.
Well, you could go to a Marriott, that's true, or a Holiday Inn.
Or Motel 6, or anywhere that's not a Wyndham
Hotel. No,
that's
a Wyndham. Oh, actually, Motel 6 is our anchor hotels. Motel 6 and Red Roof Inn are anchor hotels. And if you go to Super 8
or... Oh, we need to know this. Boy, do we need to know this. You got 4 seconds, Rebel.
Everything's consolidating.
Okay. All right, nice talking to you. We'll talk to you again next week. I don't think there's any way we can avoid that, but please do not call again, because we want to open up the phone lines for other people. Thank you. This is not a recording.
I was afraid to ask.
Don't encourage him, please.
What's an anchor motel? What is that?
Yeah.
What is an anchor?
We can give you his number. You can call him and have a nice discussion about hotel chains. 802-321-4225. Please, people, as if your life depended on it, call quickly and get through to us. 802-321-4225. What? He used a different phone number? Is that what happened? He fooled us.
Yeah, I think I was...
How does he have access to two phone lines?
I was hoodwinked.
Wow.
So as I understand it, your voice, your face, and your iris are not subject to Fourth Amendment protections. Is that true?
Is that true, Alex?
I'd have to look that up. I don't know off the top of my head if your voice, your iris, and your what?
Face.
These
are organs that are about you.
Seems like kind of an important thing to know, you know?
Yeah, things that you have no reasonable...
expectation of privacy around.
That's right.
That makes sense because you put your face out in public all the time.
Right? Yes, yeah. And, I mean, iris scanning technology is amazing at a distance and so forth. You just walk by an embassy. Incredible technology out there. And, you should be aware of how and... when your information is being mapped, I guess.
Uh-huh. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, Alex, isn't it like the issue where if you get arrested, the police can force you to use your fingerprint to unlock your phone, but if it's a password or a passcode, they can't force you to input your code?
Yeah, that's right, because it's a speech act at that point. Right?
Right, it's something you know versus something that's just part of you.
Yeah, and it's essentially really a Fifth Amendment issue, right? That you would be doing something that would lead to your incrimination. You're not supposed to do that. Right?
Who is going to invent fingerprint scramblers? You know, some kind of device you wear that changes your fingerprints so that you either show it to somebody else or somebody they can't identify.
It's called years of manual labor.
Well, okay, there's that, but I just think there's probably a smoother, more high-tech way of doing this. All right, do we have a call, Kyle?
Yes, there's a phone call.
We have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Rebel again.
No, it's not. Oh, you've gotten really good at disguising your voice.
They've proven our whole conversation.
Now, I just wanted to ask a general question. I mean, I was watching something on YouTube today, and it's like maybe three songs by Bob Marley, like three songs today, like three songs they just put out today, modern songs. And they were just done through AI, and it sounds just like him, like it was just AI stuff. And
wow.
It was Bob Marley singing about modern stuff. He was talking about politics, like stuff, you know, relatively recent stuff, Trump and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, my God.
That's... kind of made me wonder, where do you think, I've never really heard your thoughts in general, you know, this, maybe you have covered it, I don't know, but just AI in general, I mean, even in politics, I mean, I can see someone, you know, they can put out an ad or something and say, somebody said so-and-so, somebody said such-and-such.
Right.
You know, using computers to manipulate it. And do you have any thoughts on AI in general? I mean, we could put out Elvis Presley records. We could put out whoever is dead. We could just put out anybody.
Yeah, tempting as that might be, I don't know. I feel we should try and restrain ourselves. But my thoughts on AI, you know, I think it's terrific. I think it's a great invention. It can be a wonderful resource. It can also be a horrible tool and something that is abused in a very bad way. You know, I find that when we see these things being used in ways that hurt us, the one thing that people in control do not want is for you to have the same access. So, you know, if someone abusing fingerprints or facial recognition, what if you had the same ability? What if you had the same technology and you used it against them? They really, really don't like that. So once everybody has a lot of access to these tools, it'll be mayhem for sure, but I think you'll know not to trust a whole lot of things that you see. The question is, what do you trust at that point?
Yeah, because you can hear the person saying these things in their own voice, I mean, the way they speak.
But your own voice is no longer your own voice, apparently.
I guess.
I mean, Bob Marley, really? I mean, it's funny, you know. I like the mischief part of it, but it's horrible insofar as, you know, this is an artist who deserves to be respected. And what are you doing? You're going to be tarnishing his image by making him say things he never said, and the uninitiated will not be able to tell the difference.
I know. If you go on YouTube, they've done it with Michael Jackson. They've done it with Tupac. You know, it's just, and it's amazing. It sounds exactly like them. You could not tell.
And that doesn't get kicked off YouTube. How is it that that's allowed to stay on YouTube? And, you know, the slightest transgression in any other way gets somebody booted.
I know. And it's strange. It's just amazing. It's just technology is just, you know, I don't know. I just think this is, I could see this getting misused, like in the next election, 2024, whatever. I just think stuff like this is just, you know, I could see somebody, you know, making a tape saying someone said whatever, you know.
Well, I'm surprised we haven't seen a lot of that. I mean, I'm, you know, as Walton was saying earlier, it hasn't really come forth as much as we were expecting, but I think it's going to happen, right?
I kind of see the reaction going the opposite direction almost, where it's easier for someone to claim that, like, let's say there was a recording of a phone call that they had, and then they'll say, like, no, it was generated by AI, right? For them to basically throw it back and use AI as a defense against some factual piece of information rather than, you know, trying to invent something and point it back at them, right?
It's kind of like saying, oh, my account got hacked when you said something stupid. You know?
Right.
I think that's what we're going to see. It's like, no, that was AI. That wasn't me.
Oh, let me ask one last question before I go. When do you have that convention again?
We just announced that. Actually, we haven't officially announced it. It's in the magazine that just came out that Alex is still looking for. But it's next July at St. John's. It's going to be awesome.
Do you skip a year? Is that how it goes?
It's only right now. It's only in even years. July 12th through 14th is the actual date. Hope XV is what it's called.
Okay, Hope. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. And it's in St. John's in Queens, right?
That's right.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. That's all I need to know. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. Wow, that was nice. Nice to hear from someone else. And we might have time for one more phone call if people are quick. 802-321-4225. Gila, I haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, it's interesting. Rebel also kind of dominated the chat this evening, so we didn't get a lot of stuff to share. But we did have someone suggest that fingertip scramblers exist, and they're called gloves.
Oh, that's clever. That's clever. I've been told.
So we'd like to thank the 32 people who have hung in with us this evening on the live chat.
So Rebel's been dominating the chat as well as the phone lines. He's in rare form tonight.
Well, yeah. Also, he's wrong. I did a little checking. Acor used to own Motel 6, but they sold it to the Blackstone Group.
Okay, you know, let's not get down this rabbit hole because there's no coming out, believe me.
Oh, my God.
Although, you know, someone did share the info about the Hotel Pennsylvania, how it's completely gone now, and how sad that is. But the important thing is they don't have to worry about housing migrants there. Yeah, that was the real concern. All right. Let's see who we have. Good evening. You're on Off Talk Overtime.
Good evening, sir. One point. I had called New York Tales.
Rebel, now you are banned. You are banned. Yeah, that's what happens. Next week you may not call us. What do you think about that?
Good evening.
I think it doesn't. Okay. Can you disconnect that? Pull it out of the wall if you have to.
All right. I think I got it.
I don't know what to say. The ban is in effect.
I know what to say.
I mean,
Trust is earned. Trust is earned.
Yeah. Call the phone company and see if we can have one of those like ban things put on the phone. I think it's already on there by default. I don't know how to use it, but we'll. You know who would tell us? Rebel knows how to use it. Damn it. Should have gotten him to tell us that first before I banned him. It's a one-week ban, so next week you may not call. If you do call during the ban, that adds 2 more weeks to the ban. And if you call during those 2 weeks, that adds 4 more weeks. See, it sort of increments. So eventually, you know, in relatively quick order, you'll be banned forever, or at least, you know, for our lifetime. So don't toy with us here. All right, 802-321-4225, last chance for anyone else to call and say anything halfway intelligent. And I'm opening up to you guys on Skype land for any final thoughts.
We are also having people suggesting other ways to get around fingertip issues, including Raynaud's phenomenon and burning off your fingerprints. Thanks, everybody, for coming in clutch in the last few minutes. Also, want to give a special note to a listener called the Mac Geek, who is listening to Overtime Live with the chat for the very first time.
Wow, welcome.
So, welcome. We're glad you're here. Thanks, everybody. And, yeah, you know, check back next week to see if we're going to ban Rebel from the chat, too.
Can we do that?
We can.
Wow. Well,
that's why we have a moderator. That's literally the reason why I'm here.
That's right. You're the moderator. So, don't piss Gila off, Rebel, if you're on the chat, you know, because, yeah, you could be double banned.
Mm-hmm.
Different rules, but the effect is the same. So,
See, Smart will do alternating bans, but.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight and putting up with this. And also just sharing so much really pertinent information in these dire times.
It's always nice to be on here. Really enjoy the conversation, and you know, just thanks for having me on. I'd love to come back on, you know, in the future. Don't let it be a whole year.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be a lot to talk about in the months ahead with elections and trials and wars and whatnot. That's ahead. So there'll be plenty to analyze. Alex, do you have some final words?
No, I just wanted to also thank. Well, I can't believe it's been a whole year already since since you've been on. Now we need to have you on more often. Yeah, all kinds of just crazy things going on these days. So we're glad that you're out there sucking it all in and analyzing it all for us there, Welton. The one thing I will say to
the listeners,
right? Well, if you're interested in Peer, you should check out the newsletter, because the newsletter is really quite insightful and gives you a real peek over the fence about the craziness that's happening in these unmoderated chats in which you may not be dwelling yourself. So give it a check out. It's pretty interesting.
And where is this?
This is the Peer newsletter that Welton and his colleagues put out.
And how do we get this?
You can sign up for it at pyratech.com, pyratech.com. And I believe it's free, right? Well,
it's absolutely free. It's at the bottom. Sign up's at the bottom of the page.
Yep.
And you get to see unmoderated chats. I'm trying to know what I'm getting myself into.
No. It's just like a weekly snapshot of narratives that we see trending on smaller social media platforms.
Okay. Sounds awesome.
Yeah, crazy stuff.
All right. Rob, looks like you have something to say.
Just you'd mentioned the hotel Pennsylvania before, and I don't know if you guys have been down to the site recently, but I took a walk past it last week for the first time in a long time, and, yeah, it is very sadly razed to the ground. There are a few support beams sticking up out of the ground, but nothing else really left. It's a very sad sight for those of us to whom the place meant a great deal.
And we were only a very small part of that, considering the hotel was standing since, you know, the 19-teens. How many people were affected by it? How many people's lives, you know, were majorly impacted? It's sad. It's short-sighted. What was gained? Who knows? You had a very popular place that was turning a profit, and now you have nothing. Now you have nothing. So sad. So,
You know, in exchange, you know, that we have the Strand Bookstore as a landmark. So, you know, do we really need Hotel Pennsylvania? I mean, do you think the Landmark Preservation Commission could have done two? You know, come on. Any opportunity, you know what I'm digging at here.
The interesting thing, though, so people know, regardless, even if the hotel were still standing, we still would be at St. John's because it just worked out that way. It's unfortunate that we decided in 2020 that we were done with the hotel, and that's when COVID happened. But it's unfortunate that in addition to all that, that's when the Hotel Penn's owners decided that they were just going to pull the plug and destroy the place. So regardless, there were a number of reasons why we weren't coming back. But it's just, you know, it's just sad for all the other people that will never get to experience that. And so many people came to New York and stayed there because it was literally the only affordable hotel around, and certainly one of the biggest. So at least we were a part of it. a lot of memories, a lot of history, a lot of stuff captured on video. So let's just try to remember that. And with that somber note, we're going to sign off for tonight. OTH@2600.com is our email address. If I'm not mistaken, we're back next week. We will see you then.
Good night.